This week, January 13th, 2015, on The Digital Story, portable RAID hard drives. The Olympus 40 to 150mm f2.8 Pro Zoom Lens. Shooting and processing black and white film. All of this and more with yours truly, Derek Story, on The Digital Story. Welcome back to another Digital Story. I am back in the studio this week, but I will be on the road again for our next podcast. Now, I did not dodge the cold bullet coming back from Las Vegas last week. I actually came back on Tuesday night. And Tuesday night, you know, you get one of those little things where, oh, you got a little bit of a sore throat. And you go, oh, you know, that's just being around all the smoking in Las Vegas. That's what I tell myself. And it'll be fine in the morning. And then the next morning, first morning home from the trip, I wake up and the sore throat is still there. And there is congestion in my head. And then you have to come to the bitter realization that, yes, you fell victim to the travel virus that happens when we're getting on and off planes and hanging around large crowds of people. However, the good news is that I seem to be moving through it rather quickly. Lots of that, you know, little fizzy stuff that boosts your immune system. And I'm feeling pretty good, which is thankful because I'm getting back on a plane Thursday to head to Miami Beach. And then from there, as you know, because you've been listening to the show, off to Havana and a big adventure there. Now, I'll probably be recording next week's podcast from Miami, probably South Beach, Miami. So that'll be fun because I will have been shooting for a couple days in South Beach. And I hear it's unbelievable. I have never been there. I have been to all these other cities in Florida, most of which, in all honesty, I didn't really want to go to, but, you know, there was stuff there and I'm doing my job. But I never had a gig in Miami. So this is my first time. So I added on a couple days so I could hang out in South Beach before I fly out to Havana. And then when I come back, I'm going to spend a day in downtown Miami and shoot there. So that's like a bonus, you know, getting to finally hear the sounds of Miami and look at the buildings and the architecture, see the people, and definitely eat some of the food. So I'll be recording from Miami. I'll try to include some of the sounds of Miami in next week's podcast. So make sure you tune in for that. And then after that, I will be recording audio in Cuba. However, I'm not really sure how that's all going to shake out in terms of bandwidth. So my plan is I will be putting a show together from Havana, and hopefully I can find a way to get it loaded and so that you can listen to it. And I'm going to try to stay on schedule best I can. So we'll see how that goes, and stay tuned. It'll be an adventure for us all, that's for sure. Okay, let's do this week's snapshot. Castles, Las Vegas. I published this picture on LO, and I also published it on, I believe, our Digital Story Facebook page and on The Digital Story. I mean, it's a shot that I like. It's a fun street shot. And here's the story behind it. I was walking by this pool of water. Now, I usually like to stay at New York, at the south end of the strip when I'm in Las Vegas. I'm just comfortable there. The MGM Grand is there with a monorail station. I like the places to eat around there. And it's also pretty good street shooting. So I was hanging out down there. And the way that usually goes when I go to work in the morning at the convention center, I walk across the walkway that goes over the street from New York to the MGM Grand, and then go through the MGM Grand to the monorail system. Because as you know, to get to anywhere in Las Vegas, you always have to walk through a casino. That's a rule. And of course, that rule applies here. So as I walk across the overpass, there's a little body of water, it's a pool of water underneath the Statue of Liberty at New York, New York. If you stand at the right angle, the Excalibur Hotel will reflect in that pool of water. And it's kind of cool and it looks kind of neat. But the problem is, depending on the time of day and what's going on with the lighting and everything, you can see the potential for a shot there, but the shot isn't quite right. So it was funny, for 2 days, I'm walking back and forth across this overpass, looking at this pool of water, looking at the reflections and the lighting and everything, and trying to figure out the shot. On the third day, in the afternoon, I'm coming back, and there it is. The reflection looked really nice of the castles from the Excalibur. Now, what intrigues me about the shot is that the castles are upside down in the water. So you have the upside down castles, and I crop out all the edges and everything, so you just see upside down castles. And then there's a wall that cuts diagonally through the frame. And then there's one woman in flip-flops on the other side of the wall, sort of walking in, not an awkward position, but it's sort of unusual to my eye. And the whole thing just sort of came together. And of course, I had a camera with me. I always have a camera with me in Las Vegas. And I try to always have a camera with me anyway, but especially in places like that. And I shot, I think, one or two frames, just boom, boom, really quickly. I had a good angle, got the shot. And then I go, all right, perseverance pays off. I literally had wanted to shoot that shot for 3 days. On the afternoon of the third day, it finally presented itself, and I took the picture. And I don't care what anyone says about that shot, I love it. And that's the way we are, right? When we work really hard for a shot, it doesn't matter what other people think. We love it. And that's this week's Snapshot. The weekly update. I have an item for our weekly update. And it's really, I think, the big news in the world of photography from last week, which is the Nikon D5500. I read the reports published about it and looked at the hands-on pictures, and Nikon had it at CES, and it's going to be out pretty soon, I think next month, February. And it's their newest entry-level camera, but it's fairly impressive, and the body's going to be $900. And I'm just going to read you, I think the blurb that I liked best online was from Engadget. So let me read you their little blurb about it. Nikon's D5500 features a 24.2 megapixel CMOS sensor without an optical low-pass filter, aka OLPF, which is great for producing high-quality, sharper images. To tie it all together, there's a 3.2-inch adjustable LCD touch screen on the back, an upgrade from the Nikon D5300. Nikon says the D5500 can handle up to 820 shots per charge with 60% flash usage, or 3200 without any at all. While it may look very similar to the D5300, from the outside, the D5500 is a definite improvement over its predecessor. It will be available for $900 next month, body only, and you'll have the option to choose between the traditional black hue or a spicier red. The really big thing to me is it now has a touch screen. By the way, Wi-Fi is built in. You don't need a module or anything like that, so that part's good. The construction of the body is different, and it's lighter, and one of the comments that some other folks said was that when they actually held it in their hands, they were surprised at how nice and light it really was. So if you're looking for a really nice entry-level camera and you already have Nikon glass, the 5500 is probably one worth taking a look at. And it was really the only big DSLR news at the CES show. So Nikon, you know, they got the whole spotlight to themselves. There was a lot of other things, compact cameras and odds and ends for sure. But in terms of the world of DSLRs, Nikon scooped the day, and the D5500 is a good looking camera, and again, it should be available next month. And that is this week's weekly update. Feature story number one. I'd like to talk about the Olympus Digital ED 40 to 150 millimeter f/2.8 professional zoom lens. And they do label this as a pro. This is a pro lens. Now, it's been announced for a while, and there are definitely some of them in the wild. Photographers are shooting with them. And I was able to finally get my hands on one. I wanted to write about this because as we look at Micro Four Thirds, I think the world is kind of going down a couple different paths at the same time. First, there's the very nimble path, the path that I tend to write about a lot, where the camera bodies are on the smallish side, whether they're by Panasonic or Olympus, Samsung, whomever, Sony, of course. And then there are camera bodies that feel very much like a DSLR, such as the Panasonic GH4. And even though it's still smaller, it looks like a DSLR, it grips like one, you know, it has a lot of the same features and appearance as a DSLR. And we're seeing the same thing with lenses too. In fact, my Instagram photo for Monday, which is the day I'm recording this, I thought it would be fun because I took the Panasonic zoom, the small one, the 35 to 100 f4 to 5.6 zoom, which is tiny, tiny zoom, optically sharp and beautiful, but just small. And obviously the maximum aperture on is f4 and it goes to 5.6. And I put it next to, I call these, unlikely siblings. I put it next to the Olympus, the 40 to 150 f/2.8 Pro, which literally towered over this small little Panasonic zoom. And I think these two lenses are a good example of the two paths that I'm talking about. This super light 3-ounce zoom that basically has an effective focal length of 70 to 200. I'm talking about the Panasonic now. Versus the 80 to 300 Olympus zoom that has a wider maximum aperture, definitely has some deluxe features such as splash proof and really great AF system, all that kind of stuff. But it's much bigger, it's like 31 ounces and 6 inches long without the hood on it. So very different options that we have here. Obviously, the Olympus Pro would be for more professional type jobs, and you'd want to put it on an Olympus EM1, for example, because you actually need the camera to be big enough to balance out the zoom while you're holding it in your hand, if you don't have it on a tripod or a monopod. I think it'd be difficult to shoot with that lens on a pen, for example, because you just don't have enough to hold on to, and the weight of the lens would be, you know, pushing it down and forward all the time. And then on the other hand, of course, the little guy, which is great for street shooting in daylight, you can put it on any camera, something as small as a Panasonic GM5, or you can put it on the Olympus EM1, and it works fantastic. But again, you're probably not going to use it at a sporting event. You're definitely not going to use it at an indoor event because of the maximum aperture. And it probably doesn't have, you know, the same swift autofocusing precision that the bigger Olympus Pro has. But you have two choices, and one choice is definitely going to be better for certain situations, such as my trip to Cuba. I'm going to take the smaller lens. I'm going to be outdoors shooting more travel shots, and it'll be fine. I should have plenty of light for that particular lens. And then, obviously, if I was going to shoot indoor basketball, I'd want the Olympus. So let's talk a little bit more about the Olympus. It is 6.3 inches long and weighs 31 ounces. It provides a 35 millimeter equivalent of 80 to 300 millimeters with a constant aperture of f2.8. Now, it doesn't have image stabilization built in. Most Olympus lenses don't because the image stabilization is built into the body of the camera. Now, a lot of times that won't make a difference if you want to put the lens on a Panasonic body. For this lens, however, I don't think I would put it on a Panasonic body because when you have that kind of focal length, 80 to 300 millimeters, you do need image stabilization, unless it's on a tripod or a monopod. So I think this particular lens is definitely better for Olympus bodies than it is for Panasonic bodies. Some of the interesting tech specs: it has one spherical element and 5 ED optical elements. That's pretty cool. Zero lens coating, and that, you know, to resist dust and smudges. It's dust, freeze, and splash proof. It has manual focus clutch, has an extra function button, which I always think is cool. I love that. And it has a minimum focusing distance of 27.6 inches. Now, one of my favorite features of the lens is actually the lens hood. And yes, with this optic, you get the lens hood and you get a lens case both. And they made this beautiful lens hood, bayonet mount. So you put it on the front. And then when you're not using it, you just slide it down and it slides down over the body of the lens so that your maximum length is back to 6.3 inches. When you want to use the lens hood, you just slide it out and you don't have to dismount it. You don't have to turn it around and reverse it. You don't have to do any of that stuff. It just slides up and down. It locks in nicely in both positions. And it's really cool. This is a terrific feature. So it's funny, one of the complaints about Olympus lenses often is that you don't get the lens hood with it. So they did give us a lens hood, and not only did they give us a lens hood, it's a really cool one. Now also, it has a tripod mount that is collared onto the lens. My impression is that it isn't removable. I played with it a little bit, but one of our TDS Virtual Camera Club members, Mike Boyne, has one of these, and he wrote on the Facebook page for CT Digifoto, where I posted the review of this, Mike wrote that you can take it off. You just sort of keep loosening it, and you change it to a certain position, and you can take it off, which I think is handy for street shooting and when you're out and about with it. Now, what I do with a tripod collar on my 7200 Canon is that when I'm street shooting, all I do is just rotate that foot, right? The foot that you mount to the tripod itself. I just rotate that foot upwards so it's on the top side, and then it doesn't get in the way of my hands. I never really worry about taking it off or trying to take it off. So it's a matter of personal preference. But the thing to know is that from someone who actually uses this zoom lens a fair amount, you can take off that tripod collar if you want. For autofocusing, they use the dual voice coil motor, VCM system, that features two separate lens groups, each controlled by their own linear drive motor. And I tell you, the focusing is swift. It is really nice, and it is almost dead silent. So that is a really nice innovation, and I love the way this lens focuses. In terms of image quality, on my test shots, I thought it was outstanding. Sharpness, terrific. Hardly any vignetting. Very little distortion. I was really happy with that. And really the only thing that I saw, and I actually did some research online to confirm that, make sure I wasn't seeing things, was a little chromatic aberration in some of the corners every now and then. And of course, that's only in certain situations. Usually when you have a very linear object against a very bright background, you might see a little fringing here and there. And of course, that's very easy to get rid of if you need to in post. It wasn't really an issue, to tell you the truth, but I feel like I had to say something about it because, you know, hardly any lenses are ever perfect, and it would just sound weird me saying that the image quality with this lens is perfect. So I will say that it's darn good. It's excellent. And the only thing I could really find wrong was a little bit of a CA in the corners every now and then. Overall, this is an excellent, excellent optic. $1,500. I don't think it's priced too steep at all for what you're getting. I think you're getting something that you will use and enjoy for a long time. The only real question I have for those of you that are thinking about getting it is just think about the pass, these two paths that I talk about for mirrorless cameras, because I think it's really kind of shaping up that way. And this lens will take you down the path of a bigger kit that weighs a bit more. Now, the cool thing about mirrorless, of course, is that you switch lenses. Maybe you take off the grip, and unlike a DSLR, you can travel very light. But this will make your kit bigger. But I'll tell you, in certain situations, the Olympus 40 to 150 f/2.8 Pro optic would be definitely a blessing. Okay, let's take a stroll over to the screening room. I'm pretty excited about this week's topic. When I'm digging around, looking for artists to recommend, and then you stumble across someone like this, and this is Conrad Eek, who I'm referring to, and his title is Shooting and Processing Black and White Film. And this is just a flat out cool title. Now, I'm not sure that I think it's so cool because I used to do this. I used to shoot for a newspaper, shoot Tri-X, develop it in either D76 or Accufine, print with Dektal and Rapid Fixer. I'm not so sure that this was maybe nostalgic or flashback for me, or if it was just flat out cool. At the end of the day, I think it's just flat out cool. He talks about the different cameras that are available now, how you shoot a little differently with film than you do with digital, processing the film, scanning the negatives, and then even getting into some printing. And he has all the stuff. Boy, I tell you, he's got the darkroom sort of set up. He actually does some of the mixing of the chemicals in his kitchen, which in all honesty made me a little nervous. But anyway, I'm going, don't breathe that powder as you're pouring it in there. It's bad for you. I don't know. Just a flashback from chemical darkroom days, I guess. But at any rate, if you have an interest in film, and especially processing your own, this is a screening room title that you want to check out. Now, we had some confusion, and this was between me and Linda last week, on the link to the Digital Story screening room. And I had been using the link that we had been using before, thinking that that's the link that I should be using. And I actually should have been using a different link. So if you went over last week, you saw an old show, an old feature, instead of the one that I was talking about, which was the Ben Long title last week. This week, we got it straightened out. So now if you go over to lynda.com, lynda.com/thedigitalstory, or use the link that I have in the show notes, it'll take you to our screening room landing page with the current one, which is this wonderful Shooting and Processing Black and White Film with Conrad Eek. It's just cool. If you do nothing else, just watch the intro movie. You'll know what I'm talking about here. If you decide that you want to watch the whole thing and you're not a member of lynda.com, you can sign up for your 7-day free trial right there on that page. Watch all of Conrad's movies and everything else, including over 20 titles by yours truly. Story number 3, portable RAID drives. So this was something that got on my radar actually at CES. And it was kind of funny how it came about because, you know, I go early before the show actually starts because I have all the press events, which gives us, I think, a better quality time with the vendors. There's just fewer people. It's easier to navigate and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And the photography stuff was, you know, in all honesty, not as exciting as I had hoped. So when I'm in that situation, then I start kind of pushing outwards a little bit, looking at things that complement the photographic workflow. And one of the things that I was looking at were hard drives, and especially these two by LaCie and Western Digital. And what they've done is they've given us a hard drive sandwich, essentially, which is two hard drives in an enclosure that is designed for travel. So they're not too big. In fact, when you look at them, they more or less look like the portable hard drives that we're used to, except they're just a tad thicker. They're in enclosures that are meant for, you know, banging around in your backpack, in your camera bag, things like that. Both of them have Thunderbolt connectivity and USB 3.0 connectivity. And if you're using Thunderbolt, you don't need an external power source. And this is really cool for a hard drive array that you can configure as RAID 1, which means it will mirror, and you don't need an external power source. I think that's a big deal. Now, what do I mean by RAID 1? There's a software control panel that allows you to configure each drive. And when you set it to RAID 0, then essentially you have, let's say, 4 terabytes of total hard drive space that you can use, but you have no mirroring, no backup. Use the control panel to configure the drive to RAID 1, then you have mirroring built in. Now your storage space in this case would go down to 2 terabytes, but everything that you write to one hard drive will be mirrored or backed up on the other hard drive. So if something goes wrong with one of the hard drives, then you have another hard drive that's an exact duplicate of it. And the thinking being, of course, hard drives do fail. And if one of these happens to fail, and, you know, all brands fail, by the way. This is not, you know, I hear stories all the time and I read reviews. I'm never buying this hard drive again from this manufacturer because it died. Well, all hard drives eventually die, some sooner than others. It's somewhat random, it's somewhat weird, and there's usually a lot of variables involved. Having a RAID 1 setup helps with that. So the two hard drives are the LaCie Rugged RAID, and that one should be out, I'm thinking, around March. And the other one is the Western Digital My Passport Pro, and that one is out right now. And I'll put links to them in the show notes. Actually, what I'll do, I'll put the link to the article that I wrote for CT Digiphoto that has photos and explanations about these drives. And then you can continue on your research by just hopping over to one spot. But I was pretty impressed with them. And I was thinking that, you know, over a long haul, if I wanted that sort of instant backup of the content that I was sending to my hard drive, and this is especially if you're keeping your masters on an external drive. If you have, for example, a MacBook Pro with a SSD drive in it, you're probably not keeping your Lightroom or Aperture library on the internal drive. You're probably keeping the masters on an external drive even while you're traveling. This would allow you to have an instant backup of that work while you're on the road. So anyway, I thought they were pretty cool. The link is in the show notes. It's an article that I put on CT Digiphoto. And the two drives, again, are the LaCie Rugged Raid and the Western Digital My Passport Pro. They're definitely worth a look at. I thought they were impressive. Okay, let's do a little virtual camera club business here. Our photo assignment for January 2015 is backlighting. And again, you might want to take a look at Ben Long's tutorial on lynda.com on photography backlighting, and that'll kind of help you for this photo assignment. And one of those submissions to our gallery will receive a free sizzle picks. They'll be selected as the sizzle picks pick of the month by the good folks over at Sizzle Picks, who support the photo assignment and they support the digital story, which we're very happy to have them do that. So it's sizzlpix.com. They have a tile on all the pages of the digital story. And they also have what I've been talking about the last few weeks, which is PayPal credit available. So if you happen not to win when you submit to the photo assignment, and by the way, you can find out all the information for this photo assignment just by going to the member info page or at the top nav bar. I have a photo assignment up there. But if you happen not to win the photo assignment, you can always buy a sizzle picks. They're absolutely fine with that. And if you're a little short on cash right now because it's the new year, you're coming off Christmas, you know, the holidays in general, all of that sort of stuff, no problem at all, because now with PayPal credit, you have no payment until July. And that's available through Sizzle Picks. And then, of course, they take all the other normal payment methods too. It's like a retina display you can hang on the wall, sizzlpix.com. And remember, Valentine's Day is coming up, right? We got the major holidays in our rearview mirror, and we've got another one up in front of us, a Valentine's Day. Think about maybe getting your sweetie something a little different. Maybe a Sizzle Picks would be a great Valentine's Day gift. And if you're going to do that, you might want to get started on that now. Also, Red River Paper, we're near the end of their discount. It actually ends on 1/15. So depending on when you listen to this podcast, but that is good for 10% off an order, good one per customer. You just have to use this code at checkout, STORY10X, STORY10X. Red River Paper, of course, the most outstanding inkjet printing paper in a variety of surfaces, more surfaces than you probably even realized existed, plus folding greeting cards, plus panoramic print size. I mean, really, they have everything. And since they make the paper themselves and they sell it directly to you, then you get to cash in on the savings. And on top of that, you can save another 10% by using this discount code. By the way, I have it in the show notes in case you forget it. And also remember, they have a beautiful Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. All right, that's going to do it for this week. I'm going to wrap up this cold and then get ready to get back on the plane and head out to Miami. You'll hear from me in Miami. That'll be my next podcast. And then we'll see what happens from there. But I guarantee you it will be fun. And I look forward to sharing my adventures with you. Make sure you come back. In the meantime, have a great week. Bye-bye now.